E tidings, Cosmos. Good morning, 21st century world of worlds. This is Radio Richard Island, coming to you from within the soundproofless studio of life itself. Thaumila Falcher Rothensha. I am your host, Richard McSweeney. Hear this, listener, give it here your fullness of ear. From the beginning there is breath, and upon that breath there are words. Was watching a dog across the way. He is enclosed in a long, lovely garden, of which he has the complete freedom to walk up and down and about it all he wants, all day long, no strings attached. He has fresh water, and his food is served to him daily. The garden has a large, double, see-through wrought iron gate, which is always kept closed. But now, for some reason, this morning, the owner, being mindful of other things, must have forgotten to close it. And the dog was somewhat anxiously walking up and down and looking over at it, and letting the odd bark out of him at it. He even came over and sniffed at the gate, the opening part of it, and even licked it once or twice, before backing back from it and going to sit down and be looking over at it. After a while, he just laid back down for himself, as he had had enough of it, seemingly, enough of being concerned and thinking about it. After about 4 or 5 minutes, however, he suddenly rose to his feet, and loudly barked 3 or 4 times over at it, and began to run towards it with his tail wagging in the air. And I was looking forward to this, and expecting that he will definitely have a run out through the open gate into a big yard. But no. No, he skidded himself to a stop, right at the opening, and raised the hind leg and blessed it before sauntering back with his head and tail down to where he usually stretches himself out. Soon he fell asleep, and there was no more out of him. Perhaps he was, I imagined, happily dreaming of running way out beyond the gate. And I asked myself, is it possible to become so used to confinement, so used to captivity, as not to even want to avail of a given opportunity to set oneself free from it? Maybe, I thought, he is one very clever dog who well knows and is very contented with his blessings, and wouldn't do anything as foolish as go check out a bigger world than his known world, preferring by far his captivity and its regular comforts. Pitiful, truly pitiful, is that of the happy slave mentality. And the sage in the digital age speaks of the philosopher of old, saying, "And in another dream," he said, "he entered a settlement holding where the inhabitants didn't write anything down like we do today. He said to an old man who was sitting in the shade of a great tree, that if you don't write down about your life, we in the future won't be able to know anything about you and your way of life. He answered by saying, "What is writing? We tell stories to each other, and we do that up generations, down generations, without ever coming to an end. This is how we keep word of who we are and what we do ever alive, ever in our presence." In a moment, he said, he saw a long line of people stretching from east to west through the settlement holding, and they were writing on canvases of some sort, writing everything of their past down, and everything from their daily lives. And he said he was smiling with seeing such a sight. In today's broadcast, I'll be reading from Prince Hamlet, The Republic, and the true classic of Southern Taoist fragrance. This is a reading in continuity from Prince Hamlet. Do you see this, O God? Laertes, I must commune with your grief, or you deny me right. Go but apart, make choice of whom your wisest friends you will, and they shall hear and judge betwixt you and me, If by direct or by collateral hand they find us touched, we will our kingdom give, our crown, our life, and all that we can ours, to you in satisfaction. But if not, be you content to lend your patience to us, and we shall jointly labor with your soul to give it due content. Let this be so. His means of death, his obscure funeral. No trophy, sword, nor hatchment o'er his bones, no noble rite, nor formal ostentation. Cry to be heard, as 'twere from heaven to earth, that I must call it in question. So you shall, and where the offence is, let the great axe fall. I pray you go with me. What are they that would speak with me? The sailors, sir, they say they have letters for you. Let them come in. I do not know from what part of the world I should be greeted, if not from Lord Hamlet. God bless you, sir. Let him bless thee too. He shall, sir, and be pleased him. There's a letter for you, sir. It comes from the ambassador that was bound for England. If your name be Horatio, as I am let to know it is. Horatio, when thou shalt have overlooked this, give these fellows some means to the king. They have letters for him. Ere we were 2 days old at sea, a pilot of very warlike appointment gave us chase. Finding ourselves too slow of sail, we put on a compelled valour, and in the grapple I boarded them. On the instant they got clear of our ship, so I alone became their prisoner. They have dealt with me like thieves of mercy, but they knew what they did. I am to do a good turn for them. Let the king have the letters I have sent, and repair thou to me with as much speed as thou wouldst fly death. I have words to speak in thine ear, will make thee dumb, yet ere they much too light for the bore of the matter. These good fellows will bring thee where I am. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern hold their course for England. Of them I have much to tell thee. Farewell. He that thou knowest thine, Hamlet. Come, I will make you way for these your letters, and do it the speedier, that you may direct me to him from whom you brought them. A reading from Plato's The Republic. Well, I said, Thrasymachus, that matter is now settled. But were we not also saying that injustice had strength, do you remember? Yes, I remember, he said, but do not suppose that I approve of what you are saying or have no answer. If, however, I were to answer, you would be quite certain to accuse me of haranguing. Therefore, either permit me to have my say out, or, if you would rather ask, do so, and I will answer, very good, as they say to story-telling old women, and will nod yes and no. Certainly not, I said, if contrary to your real opinion. Yes, he said, I will, to please you, since you will not let me speak. What else would you have? Nothing in the world, I said. And if you are so disposed, I will ask and you shall answer. Proceed. Then I will repeat the question which I asked before, in order that our examination of the relative nature of justice and injustice may be carried on regularly. A statement was made that injustice is stronger and more powerful than justice. But now justice, having been identified with wisdom and virtue, is easily shown to be stronger than injustice. If injustice is ignorance, this can no longer be questioned by anyone. But I want to view the matter, Thrasymachus, in a different way. You would not deny that a state may be unjust and may be unjustly attempting to enslave other states, or may have already enslaved them, and may be holding many of them in subjugation? True, he replied, and I will add, the best and perfectly unjust state will be most likely to do so. This concludes reading from Plato's The Republic. This is an interpretation, after my own fashioning, of some lines from the true classic of Southern Taoist fragrance. No three-star visitor spoke to me, saying, Humaculate of Era, what stories, what anecdotes, what insights do you bring to this new dawn? There once stood, where the ancient boundaries of the Cork Tipperary and Waterford Lendries met, a most wondrous tree. It wasn't an oak, an elm, or a beech, but an unknown tree, the only one of its kind on the island. It stood about 5 times the height and width of an average fully grown oak tree. It was said to have been several thousand years old, and the name given to it through the generations was the Sun Sky Tree, for it was said that it had grown from a seed that had of a high blue sky day fallen from out of the sun. Yes, fallen from out of the sun. Its fruit was about 10 times the size of a good-sized apple, and they were said to have been delicious. When southerly breezes would blow, the delightful fragrance would be carried all the way up north, even to the furthest-most isles. Every autumn the kings and queens of the Landries would send someone from the kitchens to bring some fruit back. And there was enough fruit to go around a number of times over for all the Landries. Then one winter, a king of a Landry, nobody really knows which one, was said to have had a dream, in which he had been told that this was going to be the last spring the tree would produce fruit, and that come the following winter snows, it would die and be no more. Word of his dream got out, and in no time spread to all the Landries. People became so concerned about this possibility that each of the Landries sent their horticulturalists to go secure a branch, a limb or a snip of the tree, and to bring it back and plant it. By mid-spring of that year, the tree had been so stripped bare of its branches that only a stump remained, a lifeless stump. And it was discovered that not alone that, but not a single one of its branches, limbs, or snips grew in any one of the Landries. There was nobody who didn't feel deeply sad about it. Years later, the king who had dreamt the so-called dream about the imminent dying of the Sun Sky Tree admitted on his deathbed that the tree of his dream was not in fact the Sun Sky Tree, but rather that of an old tree in his palace orchard that had been planted by one of his ancestors. If the truth be known, the Sun Sky Tree would be still growing to this day, bearing delicious fruit in plenty, and its delightful fragrance upon southern breezes would be carried all the way up north, even to the furthest-most isles. In a dawn reverie of this new day, meditated I on what an immortal self of mine did say, did lovingly relay, way back in days of long, long gone by. O mortal self of mine, when with living in your own realm and time, you will always be with knowing that I am with you. Never by each other forsaken will we be. Remember, whenever and wherever, to bravely speak out on issues when you know quite well you ought to. Refuse to let yourself silence you. The upcoming repeal here on the Isle of Ireland of the 8th Amendment of the Constitution Act 1983, which acknowledges the right to life of the unborn with due regard to the equal right to life of the mother, is such an issue in need of your courageous response. Say no on referendum day, Friday 25th of May, to the making of a law that would fast-track us as individuals and as a people to inhumanity. The beloved lives in the wombs of tomorrows will to us in their own way be eternally grateful and ever so proud of us. All right, I will leave it at that for today. Enjoy taking very good care of yourself and those around you. Be ever so grateful for your many blessings. You have been listening to an Irish philosopher of the natural kind bringing radio to the internet via Radio Richard Ireland, on the air globally for about 15 minutes, Monday to Friday. The script format of today's broadcast will be available at a future date on AuthenticClosetDramaScripts.com. It is truly an honor to have you listening. May you be a blessing unto yourself by way of your past, by way of your present, and by way of your future. Slán agus beannacht leat.